Hester has documented here that we have been forced almost into the publishing business because teenagers have not only specific needs, but specific levels of maturity. And they are at that stage where they begin to question, what is it in Judaism that is of substance? They are finished with the little Bible stories, with the elementary history kinds of approaches, and an entirely different approach is needed. I explained that the impetus for writing everything that you do comes directly from the classroom. It is either a question that has been raised, a need that you see, or in talking to the staff, an obvious lack of information in a particular area. That has actually been a very important motivation for everything that is here.
Can you talk about some specific books and give an example of what's happening, like how it came about that you decided to write on peoplehood and vocation?
Where's my lecture?
Go to public.
All right, we can get that.
Here. No, you have it right here.
Okay.
Get everything in here.
You see, again, we have this idea coming from him of if a teenager doesn't feel him or herself to be a member of the people, and to understand what that entails, then you can talk from here till tomorrow about Jewish identity.
But let me try to explain to you a few things. What Pat said is correct, that most of the material which I began to write 33 years ago, I came here, was on the elementary level. And the reason was because actually the child attended 5 years a Jewish elementary school. He studied blocks of knowledge on the infantile level, blocks. So one block was history, one block we could call the biblical story, one block was language, one block a few prayers and so on and so forth. But there was no relationship between one block and the other. As a matter of fact, in teaching Hebrew, the Hebrew language, the United Synagogue, they had published a text by a very competent young woman in beginner's Hebrew. And this was a revolution in Jewish teaching. But the unfortunate thing was that when the children finished the book on the first level, there was nothing to continue. No book. So when I came, for example, to Pittsburgh and I went to the Cholin, I found probably 300 textbooks in the closet that everybody bought, and then they threw them out because they couldn't use them. A foundation was laid for something, but a structure was never put up. So I decided I'm going to create a second level for the second grade. This is for the first grade. And what I did was I convened a seminar of teachers. Now, we had for 10 years or more, maybe 15 years, every Wednesday afternoon from 1 to 3 seminar function. Teachers from the various groups came together and we try to develop material. And one year, a text came out for the second level in Hebrew literature, or Hebrew language arts, which was a second level to the first, that was already used, but nobody else used it. And nobody else had it. Well, this book was sold in the broader country in no time. Only in Pittsburgh, some schools resisted. But I sold several hundred copies, maybe more. It was published in Israel, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Yeah, I have it here.
Do you remember what it was called?
What?
What was it called?
I have it here. The second thing was, the problem arose, everybody wanted prayers, reading the prayers. And so they taught prayers in all the schools. The same prayer was taught for 5 years.
I remember that.
And I said that, of course, there was no way of testing what the children know. There were no tests available. So you didn't know, for example, how much of the prayers the first grade knows, so you could structure another prayer for the second grade. That didn't exist. It still doesn't exist. So I decided that I created a test. A comprehension reading, a completely new approach. Published that, and it was spread to the country like wildfire. To this day, they write letters here asking we should send them a kit, a whole kit, where it was absolutely foolproof. You could decide, you could determine why a child will make a mistake in reading, what kind analysis of the error, whether it's a vowel, whether it's a letter, the kind of vowel that is found difficult, and so on and so on. Then the question was a prayer curriculum. There was no prayer curriculum. You just opened the prayer book and you taught them to read, reading without comprehension. This was a way of teaching prayer. So I structured a 5-year program, a graded program in reading prayer. And this 5-year program was also foolproof in a sense, but it's actually 4 years. After the 4th year, the children literally could read mostly many prayers by heart through melody, through music. And I got the cantor from Bnei Israel, Haisa, to tape all these prayers in melody, the melodies for these prayers, the kind of melody which I use in the synagogue. And we established, the beginning with the challenge, teaching the prayers in this curriculum with the melodies every Thursday, conducting in the classroom like a little Thursday. Before you know it, the children came into the synagogue. And they didn't even need a prayer book. They knew it by heart. The melody helped. I based my thinking on a master's dissertation by one of the finest musicologists in New York, by the name of Cowell, who wrote a master's thesis at Peter's College of Columbia, teaching prayer through melody. Well, this was eaten up in the country. Everybody bought it. I couldn't supply enough copies. We still have it. I still get letters asking if we could publish that, sell it to them if we got it. The third question came in those days, also in the elementary level. What do we teach children the first year they come into the school without a school age? And Eunice and I created three texts, three books. One was The Home. The second one was The Synagogue, The Dirty Community. This one immediately bought up in Chicago, the Board of Jewish Education is still using it, they're reproducing it. I never knew about it. My brother sent me a copy of whether they are doing it. But still, the approach was you start with your home, the immediate environment, and you go to the larger environment until you come to it. Again, everything, man, you see, we try to reach out to every area, every subject, every area, every discipline, and integrate what they learn, one area into the other, create a relationship. So the child would see, and the teacher would see the totality, but on the natural level. I remember an interesting incident. We had a seminar, 20 people, 30 people going every Wednesday. I raised the question of teaching ethical concepts, values. Where do you start? For what? My contention was that you don't create a special subject or ethics. You relate ethics to prayer. And Israel is furious. It's impossible. Ethics has nothing to do with prayer. So we decided on experimenting with this idea. Unity, principle of the Shalom. We got a few teachers who went into the classroom, selected a few prayers, explained it to the children, sang with them, taught them, and then said, well, let's find the idea, the value. And they did, and they wrote it, and brought it to the seminar. They brought the compositions to the seminar. And the Israelis walked in there. Started developing this concept, and not my book, you know, ethics and prayer, which is still a manuscript, which is a result of all those days of experimentation. Now, you see, the next was when we established the College of Jewish Studies. On the secondary level, and we had a teacher department, the education department. There was a new problem. The problem that confronted us from the very beginning, most instances. Jewish publishers, who don't exist anymore today, except maybe one publisher, Berman, but quite a number of them. Jewish publishers were interested in selling the product. So what? Where was the market? The market was on the elemental level before the child becomes bar mitzvah. And then on the adult level. And the adult level, of course, was very popular because of the revival, actually, of the Jewish Publication Society of America, the Gentile. Well, what do we do with a kid who comes with 5 years of either Sunday school or Hebrew school, comes into us to be taught on the secondary level? Where do we find material? There are no such thing. The elementary could be couldn't. The adult was too difficult. And secondly, the adult was never systematized. There were books on this and books on that and books on the other thing. Now, the same applied to Hebrew, the Hebrew department. And then, of course, the problem, another problem arose, and that was, what do the children actually know when they come into the secondary level? We began to test them. We tested them. The Hebrew language was easy, it's language. But what do they know? Basic Judaism. Judaism is more than language. What do they know, for example, of Jewish literature? What do they know of history? And you walked into a big person, a bunch of kids, and you said to them, what book did you study in the school, the green one, the yellow one? What did you learn? I remember when I began to teach at Pitt, on the special foundation in the undergraduate school, a course in the history, culture, and religion of the Jews. I had 93 students. The majority were Jews. All the fraternities came in. It became very popular in the beginning. I put on the blackboard two words. I asked for the definition of the two words. One was 586, and the other one was Torah. What is 586? Now you see, in elementary school, it was supposed to finish to be 586, which was the destruction of the first temple and the first state. Nobody. What is Torah? Nobody, not one student, could give me a definition of Torah. Now, at that time, I was invited to the philosophy department of Oberlin to give a lecture to the faculty and students on Jewish philosophy. Some of our students who went to Oberlin requested it that I be invited. They had a huge audience. I spoke an hour in the afternoon. And I continued tonight. But after the lecture, I took a walk with some of the guests and started to take a walk. And one young man said to me, I want to hear something. I assumed that what he told us was authentic. I said, it was. He said, accountant's friend, I'll never forget that. I went to a Jewish elementary school. I went to a secondary school we had. We had a marvelous rabbi, and we did. And my father was very active in the congregation, and he was a conservative Jew, and we had a Jewish home. How is it that none of the things you said I ever heard before? I said, what is it? He said, you know, if I had known it before, I would have been a better Jew today. Now, you see, what did I really say? Because the philosophy department invited me. I didn't speak in Jewish philosophy. The Jewish philosophy, really, talking is the beginning, you have to begin with the Middle Ages. And this is a difficult subject for anyone to understand, unless you have a background. I spoke of the ingredient for the Jewish civilization. I used the jigsaw puzzle idea, which I invented then, and then I wrote about it with the certain pieces that makes up to you. What are they in history, literature, and so on? And I have published a great deal about it, 10 ingredients. The first ingredient, these people. Now, Mordecai Kaplan has always said that the greatest contribution that you made was in the concept of people. It's a completely different thing than anybody ever made. So what does it mean? Second question, the second thing which I developed was the Jewish concept of poetry. Now, the third was religion. Again, there's a uniqueness about it, because Judaism is not as a religion, not like Christianity. You don't have to belong to any particular people to be a Christian. But you have to belong to a people to be a Jew. Judaism is the religion of a people who are called Jews. Without Jews, the religion has absolutely no meaning. And without the religion, the people cannot be stored. Now remember, I pointed out something which left an enormous impression as I led down gathered in the evening. I said, suppose there are 5 million Jews in America, or 4.5 million. Suppose the 5 million Jews disappear, or 5 million Christians convert to Judaism. What would happen to the religion? The religion would disappear with it.
You're saying that religion requires peoplehood, but I'm not sure if I understand the reverse of that. Isn't there a peoplehood? Is there a peoplehood that can exist without the religion?
No. Not in Judaism. You see, here is what I quoted Sacha Gaon. Sacha Gaon lived in the year 900. He was one of the great Jewish, one of the first philosophers. He said, we, people of Israel, are a nation by virtue of our poetry. Now, what does he mean by that? Now, if you ask an American, what kind of a people are the Americans? What kind of a people are the people who constitute America, the United States? The answer that you would give anybody, we are a constitutional republic. You wouldn't say that you chew gum, would you? You see, you wouldn't say that. You wouldn't say that Jews are a people by virtue of eating gefilte fish and chicken on Friday night. Which, well, of course, you say that's just the point. Now, the point is, you say that the United States, we are a constitutional republic. Jews is a people who has a religious civilization. This is what Catherine laid the foundation for. It's a dynamic, ongoing, changing, progressing religious civilization. That has nothing to do with whether you wear a skull cap in the cholen, you see, or you wear your bald spot in the cholen. Nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with a yeet kombi, you see, or you eat cheeseburger. Nothing to do with that. Now, you see now, this is number one. A booklet is coming out now, give me the thing, in which I define Jewish literature, I define Jewish history, I define the Jewish religion. It's an acquaintance now. Now, okay, so, I do begin to structure a course of study on the 10 ingredients that constitute the Jewish civilization. It's people. What is people? The Jews are the people. The religion, the people's religion. The literature, the people's literature. It's a reflection, you see, of the people, completely different. You see, in the religion, do me a favor, ask Mary for the copy of the booklet that we just finished yesterday. She has a copy of it. I want to read and show it to you what I mean by it. Because you see, unless you understand, unless I make it clear what I'm saying, nobody will understand what I'm talking about.
I think it's so important. I feel like turning off the tape and having a conversation about
it. Just keep talking. Leave it on, but keep talking. It doesn't matter. You can have a conversation. Yeah, just keep talking. Don't worry about it. Really,
I think it's something that people have difficulty understanding. I know what you mean, and I understand you.
Now,
but it's a feeling.
I'm not so sure you understand me, I didn't make it clear.
But
for you to understand is for me first to make it clear. I haven't made it clear.
That's what it is. He's listing ingredients.
Now,
and each of the things you're flushing. This is so.
No, but I just meant on the peoplehood and the religion.
No,
the combination.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
Yes. You see, for example, I want to show you what is the difference between, we talk about now, for example, I want to see religion. What is religion? You see, what I'm saying is this. That my granddaughter, who's studying at Brown, is asked to define religion in the classroom by a very dynamic professor. She's taking a certain thing, I thought. Now, she can do it. You know why? She studied in our school and we defined it for her. Specifically, I gave a course. Now, I defined religion as men's conception of God's concern with the way man lives out his life on earth. Now, look what you have it here. You have the idea further. Men's conception. Now I go in further in the literature. I say there are two kinds of religion. there's God's religion and man's religion. That's the way when you study the Bible. God's religion is what God is imagined to be. Man's religion is what you and I are, how we interpret it. What I want to show you the difference, what I say about literature. So you'll get an idea what I'm talking about. Literature is the story of men's relations to himself and to one another. It is the image of the Jew as he moves and assumes different images in different situations or different locations under different conditions. The moving Jew may not...